Welcome back, everybody, to another post-game show here on Fieldhouse Files. Just a reminder, you can read my work at fieldhousefiles.com and that I am going live on YouTube after every Pacers playoff game. And you can watch a recording on demand as well. Now, breaking news since this live post-game show, the fact that Damian Lillard's future in this series in doubt right now after re-aggravating his strained Achilles, and in doing so was in a boot, according to Shams Charania, who was on the podcast a week ago just before the series. So Giannis has been out. Dame apparently is looking and trending towards being out, and Middleton was questionable before Game 3, only to go off and score 42 points. So those are the things we're watching leading up to Game 4 Sunday at 7 p.m. at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. And hello again, everybody. We welcome you into this post-game show as the Pacers get the Game 3 win to take a 2-1 series lead over the Milwaukee Bucks on Friday night. The final 121-118 ultimately, but it took an overtime session to get there. And it was a challenge for this Pacers team. Man, I don't understand. I really don't why they didn't foul a couple of times. That was baffling to me because it's something that we know Rick Carlisle and his coaching staff believes him. And it's on top of that, it's something that we've seen this Pacers team do throughout the season. Now, yeah, it did cost them fouling DeMar DeRozan earlier in the year, the other game that was in overtime. But man, the Pacers survived. They outlasted the Bucks, and they hang on to live another day. This would have been a terribly difficult one, I think, for this Pacers team to overcome. The fact that it was at home, first home playoff game since 2019. Great energy from the crowd, although I got to believe they could have been better, but maybe you'd get that if it wasn't a Friday game at 5:30, which was due to TV. That was because ESPN had a triple header, with the other two games coming up being on the West Coast. So no, 5:30, not ideal. I mean, it'd probably take many of you to take a half day ultimately to be able to get out there and attend the game, or, you know, even watch it, quite frankly. So many people probably are at home and struggling to even get that time, that free time to be able to watch. But there's so many places I can go with this, I think, right? Because when you think about it, yes, Tyrese Haliburton had a triple-double, but it wasn't anything spectacular. You look at his stat line, 1 of 12 from the three-point line, and he wasn't alone there. So many of the Pacers struggled with their shooting after the first quarter, really. It was a special first quarter for this Pacers team as they went off for 39 points. That was that matched a franchise record for points in the quarter of a postseason game. The second quarter, they were outscored. Third quarter, they were outscored. Fourth quarter, they were outscored. And they just held on in the overtime session and got it done, quite frankly, because they really had the ball in the last possession. That's what it really came down to. There's no question the star of this game was for the Bucks. It was Chris Middleton. And yes, I am absolutely awarding player of the game, even to a guy on the other team, especially when you factor in a number of things that he was dealing with, right? 42 points for him. He was questionable entering this game, by the way. Took the day off, I think it was yesterday. Was there pregame and was getting shots up and tested it out. Seemed to be okay. And throughout the game, didn't see him favoring that right ankle that he tweaked in game two. And then early on, you wondered, are the Pacers going to blow them away, right? It was 39-22, a 17-point lead in the first quarter. And more than that, with just over 2 minutes left in the first quarter, we saw Damian Lillard go down. Went up for a layup, made it. Pascal Siakam appeared, kind of accidentally landed on Lillard's left ankle area, but he clutched his left knee, hobbled, went back to the locker room before coming back and returning in the second quarter. But it almost felt like doomsday was coming for the Bucks at that point, right? Because of the fact that they had those challenges, that, you know, Chris Middleton was questionable entering the game. The fact that they saw after Middleton, you had Lillard's injury and the Pacers had blown it open up to 19-point lead. Now, here was a big sequences that go back to why it shouldn't even reached overtime. What I think back here is the end of the second quarter, or excuse me, into the first quarter, into the third quarter, into the fourth quarter, we saw the Bucks score, and it's just in silly ways. First quarter, it was Patrick Beverley. Nembhard just touching him from behind, a clear foul, but just a dumbass play. What are you doing? And Beverley went and made two of those three foul shots. Boom. You don't foul him there. He's not going to make that shot. He was running 1 second left, leaning forward. Then you had Middleton knock down, I think it was a three-pointer at the end of the third or second, or excuse me, it was a two-pointer, a jumper, 17 feet out at the end of the third quarter. Knocked that one down as time expired, kind of to go to the fourth quarter. And then, of course, not fouling. Pacers electing not to foul at the end of regulation, and Middleton knocks down the three-pointer, a frustrating thing, I think, for the Pacers and their fans as well. I don't understand at all why the Pacers did not to do that, because the opportunity was there multiple times. In regulation, there was Lopez and then Lillard who got it, I believe it's right, to then Middleton. You had several opportunities to foul, but ultimately you did not. And then in overtime, you had another chance to do it. They chose not to, and Middleton had a chance at the three-pointer. First, he banked one in, then attempted that one out of the left corner, missed it. But I didn't like that because you go away from what you had always done. There were definitely opportunities there, and it almost hit him in the butt because that would have been difficult for them to swallow if, you know, Middleton had to go off, scored 42, Lillard was okay, and they still beat the Pacers despite their bench not really doing anything. The Bucks bench contributed 6 points. That's it. I think at halftime it was something like 19-2. So the bench favored the Pacers, to be sure. And by the way, you can leave your comments here on YouTube Live as well, and I'll get to those, whether it's comments or questions. And of course, as always, I will later post this on the Fieldhouse Files podcast, and you can rewatch this as well on YouTube if you're jumping in now or later or getting to it a little bit later on. But a 2-1 series lead, important here for the Pacers. They have a chance to obviously go up 3-1 before the series shifts back to Milwaukee next week. The other thing, if you're the Pacers, this is what you like. You got the victory in a tough game, a grinded out game. Guys were exhausted. Lillard had his hands on his knees. Middleton was breathing heavily. Pacers were too, to be sure. But this is an older Bucks team. This is a team you're really trying to run and gun. You're really trying to beat up the floor. You're really trying to out hustle. And I thought the fact that the Bucks wore down, what you saw, that was pay dividends later on in the game for the Pacers in terms of offensive rebounds. There was that one sequence that lasted over a minute of game time where the Pacers grabbed 6 offensive rebounds, failed to score during that stretch, which I thought that automatically was going to be, you know, that's clearly my turning point in the game. Pacers have a 90-second sequence, 6 shots at it, 5 offensive rebounds, actually, and don't score. And if the Bucks went down and scored, and then again, like, that's game changer right there. But ultimately, that did not cost them. Missing free throws ultimately almost did, though. Remember, Siakam had the and-one opportunity, went to the line where he has been average. I think game one, he was 5 of 10 from the free throw line. Middleton went to the line looking to complete the 3-point play and missed it. Missed it. What are you doing? Make your free throws. He's a much better player than that. And he was contained today. 17 points, 7 of 17 shooting, 9 rebounds, and just 5 free throw attempts. Interestingly enough, Aaron Nesmith attempted more free throws than him. Miles Turner did with 6. But as a whole, free throws continue to be an issue for this Pacers team. Just 18 of 24. Compare that with what the Bucks did well, 26 of 27. And I mentioned that on my At the Buzzer story that's alive now online at fieldhousefiles.com, the fact that maybe that was a reason you don't foul because they've gone 26 of 27. No, I take my chances. Number one, they're gassed. Different scenario in the game there. On top of that, I'll make them have to do that several times. I get, you know, they much rather take the odds of them having to make both free throws, foul me then, and then have to hit free throws again in a 3-point game, much more than a player like Middleton, who finished with 4 3-pointers and several of those very late in a critical game, is what really stood out in that one and gave them a real chance in that one. So that was special for them. I'm curious to go back to my previous point. I'm very curious what this Bucks team is going to look like in game four. I gotta believe they are exhausted, gassed. I'm not even sure they want to get shots up tomorrow. If I'm them, I'm saying stay in your hotel rooms. We'll meet for film, a little action in the morning, but mostly stay off your feet, drink your fluids, and be ready to go Sunday night. That's a veteran team, an experienced team for the most part, in a group that really leans on their starters. 42 points for Middleton, 28 for Lillard, 17 for Portis. And I thought Bobby Portis was fantastic. 17 and 18 rebounds in tonight's game. First comment says this: one of 12 from three, the worst shooting performance for Hallie. Again, he hates being called Hallie, so I don't call him that. I have not looked up specifically in his career if 1 for 12 from 3 is the worst. It also is subjective. Like, is an 0 for 6 worse than 1 for 12? I believe he's had one of those nights. Didn't he have an 0 for 9 earlier this season? That sounds familiar, right after the injury. By the way, from what I saw tonight, I can tell he's not 100%. I was watching him during a timeout. Him, along with Rick Rowe, one of the ball boys, applied a heat pack to right under his left thigh. That's his hamstring. So trying to ignite that, I think, is what that's trying to do. It's trying to keep it warm, keep it comfortable and feeling better. And that was, I think, in the third quarter, maybe the fourth, but that tells me it's still something he's thinking about. And that aligns with also what we saw. And I trust my eyes out there. That tells us a lot, oftentimes a lot more than what players will say, because they don't want to give up any disadvantage and the other team realize stuff. But there were several times there. I think it was in the fourth quarter. Second half, fourth quarter, 6 minutes left. Halliburton finally made a three-pointer after starting 0 for 6. It gave them the lead up too, but later on from that, there were several times where he passed on it. It might have been because he had missed much throughout the night. I also think he didn't exactly have that explosion, that pop, like we have seen from Tyrese fall in games since that injury in February. So again, not significant, but it's absolutely something that is worth watching. MVP of this game, I mean, it's clearly Middleton. Without him, this is a 20-point Pacers win. If you're going to the Pacers side, I think you got to lean on Turner for what he was able to contribute. 29 points, he set the tone with the first three-pointer of the game. I think he hit a three-pointer to start the second half as well. He paced them tonight in a game where the Pacers really struggled from shooting. As you mentioned, Tyrese, 1 of 12 from 3. How about Nesmith, by the way? He hits that corner pocket 3 after going 0 of 6 from three-point range. And what probably helped is it was a bad pass. The shot clock was winding down. He had to step awkwardly to his left and try to get it up there, and ultimately was able to knock it down to really help the Pacers right there. It was with 15 seconds left. And that ultimately became a huge shot for him, a guy that I think should be able to contribute 3 made threes per game. And he would have gotten there if he had a decent percentage. They just weren't falling tonight. 1 of 7. Typically, that's 3 of 7. And then, again, you don't have an overtime session. So this was a game overall. Pacers were actually outshot by the Milwaukee Bucks, 43% to nearly 47%. And because of those offensive rebounds, one of the most notable things, I think, to me, was the fact that the Pacers were able to get so many offensive rebounds. They had 19 of them. They had 5 on that one sequence, I think 7 in the overtime session. But all those offensive rebounds allowed for the Pacers to score 32 second-chance opportunities. That's what helped keep them alive, keep them going, and really wore down this Bucks team. That's one of their emphasis coming into this matchup. They're going to pressure full court. They're going to make life difficult, make things a little bit frustrating. And we saw them overcome some early struggles, whether after their shooting, they were hot shooting to start. But after that, they faded a little bit. Are you watching Patrick Beverley and how he's defending Tyrese Halliburton? That's been a fascinating matchup for me to see here throughout this, and just see how they're pressuring one another, how Beverley really trying to keep Tyrese from getting the ball on many accounts. Then you go back on the other end of the floor, and it was interesting how the Pacers inbounded and wanted to give Tyrese Halliburton the momentum going down the floor. So he took it the length of the floor with 6 seconds left and attacked, driving on Patrick Beverley. And that very much reminded me of what Victor Oladipo used to do. He loved backing away to then move forward and plow to the rim and accelerate to the rim. That kind of reminded me of this. It was a special night, certainly at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Thanks for everyone for joining here. My Fieldhouse Files live post game show that'll be available on the podcast as well, in case you missed any of it. A sellout crowd, the 18th sellout of the season, 17,274 was the number, as every fan in attendance received a gold t-shirt. Caitlin Clark in the house, Ron Artest in the house, Tony Dungy, several Colts players currently, including Anthony Richardson. Environment was special. And got amped up at many different times, but you could sense the tension as well from fans there later in the game, as they were unsure of where this was going, of what it was going to look like as things got tense and the Pacers missed shots and the second chance opportunities helped a little bit. So that's absolutely curious. What adjustments? Hard to say immediately after this one. First of all, I like to go back and watch how game three went, because I'm tweeting, I'm working on my post-game short story, I'm texting people. But in general, I think you try to clamp down more defensively on Chris Middleton. You did that and did okay with, I think, Damian Lillard. I think you plan ahead more for that zone offense, knowing that you're going to face a little bit more 2-3, 1-2-2 against this Bucks team. And then I think more than anything now, it's again, like the Bucks, though, it's about getting rest. And after this one especially, because, yes, the Pacers have depth, but you don't really use that in the postseason. They did play Jalen Smith 3 minutes, but really Rick Carlisle utilizing an 8-man rotation, which sounds about right, 8 to 9 men. If the shots aren't going, I thought we might see a burst of Doug McDermott off the bench. The trouble is you're cold when coming off the bench. So if you don't hit one or two, then the tendency is, all right, that didn't work, let's sub him out of the game. I know for the Bucks, they're certainly going to put more emphasis on blocking out and rebounding, because if I'm Doc Rivers, I'm throwing water bottles and clipboards, I think, in the locker room, knowing you just let one slip away. For the Bucks, they were down by 19. They climbed back. They outscored the Pacers in the second, third, and fourth quarter. They got unreal shots from Chris Middleton to make things interesting. They couldn't get a rebound then in overtime, gave up 5 offensive rebounds, and still lost the game. Terribly frustrating, I think, if you're the Milwaukee Bucks, given your situation. And you look down the bench, and it's Giannis in Nike gear. He's not playing. He's in Nike gear. And you know, given if he was available in his normal self, I think it'd probably be, it'd at least be 2-1 Bucks, if not 3-0, because the Bucks are a much better team, clearly, with Giannis being out there. I don't have an official vote, but I do vote in Tim Bontemps' straw poll with at least one media member from every market, and I had Giannis within my top 5 at the last straw poll opportunity right there. Obviously had Jokic winning. He's been the best player in basketball the last 4 years. But the Pacers get the win tonight, 121-118. It's got to be weird for you Pacer fans. It's 9 o'clock. And instead of like tuning into the game or whatever, you could go out to dinner. You could go grab drinks. You could go enjoy your Friday night after the Pacers game because of this early schedule. I don't like it, and I don't think we'll see it again, but it was an ESPN reason because they wanted to have a triple-double. They wanted to have a triple header on their airwaves. Matt Wilkes, I thought the Pacers could push the pace even more on made baskets. You could see the Bucks had no legs yet. Absolutely, but I think the Pacers were nearly as tired. And I think that, to our earlier question, I don't even know how to explain your name. GZ89, we're going to go with that. The pace is a big factor, and in the second half, it was troubling, I think, if you're the Pacers. It wasn't even up to average. It fell below average. There was the one stat I tweeted out that was the Pacers had 39 points in the first 12 minutes, and then I think they had 57 over the next like 29 minutes. Like, the pace had dramatically changed and went down, which was not in favor of them and what they're trying to do. To win this series, they need to shoot it well, they need to play with pace, and they need to keep Lillard and Middleton from having special nights. And again, if you're the Bucks, that's what's so frustrating about tonight's game. Middleton, special game. Game high, 42 points. Bucks also, Pacers shot just 43%. That's excellent and good enough to keep the Pacers from winning. Pacers needed 105 shots. 49 of those shots were from three-point range. And to make things worse for the Pacers, they missed six of their 24 free throws. Missed opportunities there, especially given how the Bucks were shooting from the free throw line. 26 of 27. They're a good free throw shooting team. And so that's the challenge right there. The Bucks didn't shoot it well from three, but guess what? Middleton made a couple of threes when they needed them most there late in the game. Hey, there you are, MK Sinks. Welcome back. I was wondering where you were at tonight. 26 from three-point range. Yikes. Almost come back to bite us. Yeah, absolutely. You just didn't see him go down. You saw several guys pass up three-pointers because you feel that percentage. You can see that at halftime, too. But Haliburton was passing up threes and looking for the next pass instead. And by the way, he did have a solid game, finishing with a triple-double. I think he becomes the fourth Pacer in NBA history to record a triple-double in playoffs, joining, I should pull it up here in front of me. I think it was Mark Jackson, Paul George, and Victor Oladipo in NBA history. He finished with 18 points, 10 rebounds, which is unique, and then 16 assists. That's more like we've come to expect, but we haven't seen that number lately. I think he had 8 assists in game one, maybe 12 in game two. Well, now 16 in game three. And so to the point earlier, GZ89, the fact that Pacers needed to push the pace and play at their style more, that's exactly why you could benefit from that in a great deal. Just like Toppin, for instance, early on in that first quarter, first half, 15 points, because they were playing that run and gun style that works so well for them. Appreciate the comments too for you. Back to Matt, he said Pacers missed more threes than the Bucks attempted. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Pacers missed, 36? And the Bucks attempted 31. Good note, Matt. I hadn't done a full breakdown on the box score, but yeah, that's telling right there. And again, normally the Pacers would not win a game like this. They're not going to get those offensive rebounds in a matchup like this. And they, overtime, they haven't gotten there much this season. They did not have much experience with the overtime session. We saw that Chicago Bulls game where they lost, and that was terribly difficult. That was terribly frustrating, I think, for this Pacers team, getting to overtime and then falling like that against the Bulls. And then I think probably early on, the first two or three minutes, people had to be like, here we go again. We coughed this one up. But that's why you got to play persistent and keep that confidence throughout, because there's going to be the ebbs and flows of a game. And the Pacers just trying to navigate those and handle those all right here. So this is very difficult for the Bucks, I think, considering this situation right now, as down 2-1, no Giannis, Damian Lillard's hurting, man. In second quarter, he had like a strained groin. That was terribly difficult for them. And yet here the Pacers are up 2-1 and ready for another home game coming up on Sunday. Going to wrap up here in just a few minutes. Any other questions, feel free to leave them in the comments here. As I do want to mention a couple other notes that I passed along in my final post game at the buzzer thing. I mentioned how the Pacers gave up basically free points in the first, third, and fourth quarters. Haliburton, fourth Pacer to record a triple double. Also, this is key number. If you're the Pacers and you like analytics and numbers, in a best of seven series that was tied at 1-1, the winner of this game, the winner of game three, has gone on to win 74% of the time. So you would absolutely like your odds when it comes down to that and that current situation. And should also mention, this was the Pacers' first home win in the playoffs all the way back in 2018. I was there covering that game. That was the series against the Cavaliers that went to game seven, the goaltending year, because they lost and were swept by the Celtics after that, and then went down to the bubble and were swept by the Miami Heat in 2020. Back to the comments. Yeah, this is exactly the game the Bucks should have stolen. You're exactly right. MK Sings wants to know, what's my prediction for game four and here on out? I think it's obviously trending in the Pacers' direction, mostly because of health. And that's probably something I'm going to write either tomorrow or Sunday. Isn't it been strange how, and good, by the way, but so much of what the Pacers have been trying to do in the postseason in recent history, ignoring the last 3 years as like a rebuild, it's all been derailed by injuries. Well, right now, what their opponent is trying to do is going to be derailed by injuries, because throughout much of the year, the Bucks were the second best team in the Eastern Conference. I don't think there was any doubt about that. It went the Celtics, a clear gap, the Bucks, a clear gap, then probably the Knicks, the Cavs at times. And then I think the Magic and Pacers could be thrusted maybe into that third tier right there. But the Bucks aren't even playing like a playoff team or a fringe playoff team right now just because of injuries and all the different things that they are dealing with. By the way, don't understand what the NBA was thinking on Thursday during the, you have the NFL draft in the pace, or excuse me, the NBA is having like three games, of which I thought it was notable because the NFL has mastered everything from the schedule to timing and all that. NFL draft day one wrapped up at like 11:58. At that time, I looked over, I think it was the Lakers game, and it was like 5 minutes left in the third quarter, which tells me that's going on too late. You're not hitting your right audience if that game is still ongoing in the NFL draft has already wrapped up. So there's a lot of things that I'd like to see the NBA work on in terms of that. Also, like 5:30 game on a Friday. What are you doing here? I know a lot of Pacer fans were not happy about that tonight. It probably hurt maybe the noise of this crowd early on in the game, just because, you know, as they were still filing in or getting to their seats and dealing with rush hour traffic on their way down. Although I think many fans did a great job of getting down there and in their seats, knowing the task at hand. You asked about the prediction for Giannis moving forward. I just don't see him certainly playing this weekend. And I didn't at the start of the series. I didn't see him playing in the first two weekends, let's call them, at Milwaukee and at Indy. And then we'll see. All he's really doing, it sounds like, is getting shots up, little movements. It does not sound like he's playing in the half court, playing three on three, certainly not running up and down the floor and playing full court. And again, this is a calf injury, which leads to a hamstring, which often leads to an ankle or an Achilles. And he's had several other injuries on that left side, lower body earlier this season. So those are huge red flags if you're Giannis and the Bucks that you have to consider. How much do you want to play him versus how much do you have to be concerned with his health based on his history and all those sorts of things. So I'm thinking like best case scenario might be back here in game six if we get to that point. Again, I think that's more unlikely than not, just based on us not seeing Giannis do anything. Chris wonders if Nembhard keeps fighting, rebounding, and believe it or not, scoring in this playoffs, will he remain in the starting lineup over Mathurin? That'll be something this Pacers team has to figure out next year. Because I think what's interesting about Nembhard is he prepped himself all offseason and going into the season to be the backup point guard. He fully expected to have the ball in his hands a lot more this season. Now, he started, played a very different role, and then TJ McConnell came off the bench and was the Pacers, you know, lead point guard with that second unit. And excluding defense, I thought McConnell had a better season, frankly, than Nembhard. But Andrew is so this Pacers scene is so reliant on Andrew defensively, really, as well as Aaron Nesmith, just because of the team's shortcomings on the defensive end. So they need the help from those two in particular. Then you got Miles back there, but Halliburton gets burned a lot. Other players get burned a lot. I'd actually like to see Siakam take more on his plate and more responsibility on the defensive end, something that was embarrassingly bad the first couple months and has gotten much better over these last couple of months. Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for the question. Pacers again win 121-118, game four, Sunday night, 7 o'clock. And that one will also be on national TV. No blackout like in game two. I know that was so difficult for many Pacer fans. So that will be on TNT as well as locally with Bally Sports Indiana. You're right. I'm glad you brought up Nembhard, by the way. I didn't talk about him too much tonight, but he quietly finished with 16 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and used most of those fouls, used 5 of those fouls in 40 minutes. And that's another thing that I think is fascinating and probably the right call is how much the coaching staff's leaning on the starters right now. Depth is a regular season thing. It's an 82-game thing. In the postseason, you lean on the starters. More specifically, you lean on the stars. Nesmith, 43 minutes. Siakam, 42. Turner, 42. Nembhard, 40. Halliburton, 46 minutes. I'll have to look that up, but I guarantee that's a career high for Halliburton as well. And so that you can understand why he and others were gassed. They were playing excessive minutes. high intensity basketball. It didn't feel like these were the extended national TV timeouts either. Usually about 2:45, 3 minutes. It didn't feel like those were that long. So I don't know. But anyways, I appreciate everyone joining on here. The Fieldhouse Files live post game show here on YouTube, and also be sharing it on the Fieldhouse Files podcast. Pacers have that 2-1 series lead. Game 4 on Sunday. We'll do this all again on Sunday, and I really look forward to it. We'll have a lot more coverage in the meantime on fieldhousefiles.com. So please go on, read my work there, and subscribe. There's free and paid subscriptions available. Thanks again to everyone for joining me here, whether it was live or on a replay, and I'll talk to you again soon.